back. I'm going to be creating a workbook and emailing the video recording to anyone that would like it. So if you would like the workbook and recording, please private message me your email address. So welcome to tonight's workshop. Tonight's workshop is all about codependency and people pleasing. And we're going to be talking about how inner child healing can help to overcome codependency and people pleasing. So the agenda, we're going to look at what people pleasing is. We're going to look at what codependency is. We're going to look at what causes codependency and people pleasing. Talk about CPTSD and talk about toxic shame, attractions of deprivation, boundaries, your personal boundaries. We're going to talk about how we can build better boundaries and stop being codependent people pleasers. So starting off with a question, what do you want to get from this workshop? Let me know in the chat box what you want to get from this workshop. Thank you, Jack. Let me know in the chat box how you'll know that this workshop has been beneficial for you. Excellent. Anyone else? Okay, so people pleasing. People pleasing is putting other people's needs before your own. So it's when you can't say no, you worry about other people's opinions, you worry what other people are thinking of you. You feel the need to constantly apologize, constantly say sorry. You feel like you need people to like you, like you need other people's approval, as though your own needs don't matter, as though your own feelings don't matter. So how many symptoms of people pleasing do you have? Let me know in the chat box. To get better at reinforcing boundaries. You're a big people pleaser at work. How do you feel? How do you feel about your abilities to perform at work? So codependency. So the term codependence or codependent was first used in the 1950s to describe the partners or enablers of people who were addicted to substances. And it's still used in these relationships today. People with addiction issues can often become very narcissistic, show the traits of someone with a personality disorder. But it's also used to describe people who are in relationships with actual narcissistic or abusive individuals. So although these kinds of people will be codependent themselves, narcissistic people are actually the ultimate codependence, because they've taken on so much toxic shame that they've had to create full self, a mask that they use to interact with the outside world to separate their toxic shame and their inner core from the outside world, so that they don't feel those negative feelings and all that toxicity that they've got inside of them. And so they need to look to the outside world to maintain this full self. And they can do this by putting people down, by having a grandiose sense of self, and various other things. So a codependent is someone who's going to need to look outside of themselves for their sense of identity and to have some kind of self-worth. It's not just romantic relationships where codependency can be an issue. We can also be codependent in family roles, codependent in family units. when we're growing up, our family will often assign to us a role. That kind of role could be a super achiever, or could be black sheep, scapegoat. And the scapegoat term comes from ancient cultures where they'd keep a goat in the village and they'd put all their sins on that goat and spit on that goat and kick it. And then they'd cut it off and let it loose into the desert to die. So this is what kind of narcissistic parents, narcissistic families do. They project all of their insecurities, all of their toxic shame onto the scapegoat of the family. And even as you grow up, it's very hard to move out of these family roles. When you go back to your family unit, you're going to find yourself, you know, readopting these roles within the family system. So codependents have poor boundaries and have an inability to say no to things that go against their best interests. And it can also, as I said, show up in work and in business. Again, the work environment is a mirror of the family environment. So if you grow up with a dysfunctional family where, you know, you're taking on a codependent role, you're going to take that into your work life. So codependents are going to put other people's needs before their own. They're often going to find themselves in abusive relationships. So they're going to need to look outside of themselves for their sense of identity and self-worth. As I said previously, when we are growing up in a dysfunctional household, we're looking to our parents and caregivers to help us understand the world, help us understand ourselves. So if they're calling us names, putting us down, you know, not validating us or even invalidating us, we're going to learn that we're a bad object, that happiness, you know, no longer lives inside of us, and we're going to need to look outside of ourselves to feel okay. So a codependent relationship is a relationship where one person assumes responsibility for meeting another person's needs and puts the other person's needs before their own. As I was saying previously, a codependent may take on a rescuer role or a caregiver role, and these roles can often be adopted from childhood. If we have a parent who maybe, you know, needs care, we can become the carer boredom. If you have a parent who is, you know, I don't know, has addiction issues, we can become codependent in that role. So a codependent is going to feel like they need to be needed, like they need other people to need them to feel any value for themselves. And the longer a person spends in a codependent relationship, the more entwined they're going to become in that relationship. The more they're going to start to lose their own identity. Does anyone have any questions with regards to that? Let me know in the chat box. So, how to know if you are codependent? If you apologize when you haven't done anything wrong, if you feel sorry for someone, even though they're hurting or abusing you, if you try to help people when they don't ask for your help, you know, trying to help people or give advice to people when they haven't asked for it can still be a form of abuse. Trying to fix or save people, these kind of relationships can also become abusive. We can move into a drama triangle where people go from being the rescuer to the victim to the persecutor. So trying to help people when they don't need help or fix or save people are toxic behaviors. And you feel like you need to be liked by others. You feel like you have no sense of self. If saying no makes you feel guilt or shame, if you value what other people think more than you value your own opinions, these are all symptoms of codependency. So how many symptoms do you have? Let me know in the chat box. Most. Anyone else? Seven or eight? Four? Excellent. You have a sense of self. Okay, so boundaries. So when we grow up with dysfunction, we can have trouble forming boundaries. So children are born with no boundaries. A boundary, a child sees everything as them pushed out until about 18 months to 3 years. A child can't differentiate between themselves and the outside world. So anything that's going on in that environment, in that time frame, they're going to internalize and they're going to think it means there's something wrong with them. That is part of them. Until the age of seven is known as the imprint period. And it's in this age range when your neuroplasticity is at its highest. It's when you're looking to your parents and caregivers to help you understand the world. And if you're growing up with people that don't have any boundaries, you're not going to be able to form any yourself. So people can develop boundaries that are too rigid. And when someone has rigid boundaries, they're going to distance themselves from other people. They're going to be scared of intimacy. They won't ask for help. They're going to avoid relationships. They're going to be afraid of rejection. They're going to have issues with trust. They won't be able to trust other people. porous boundaries. You know, someone who's codependent is going to have very porous boundaries. They're going to overshare their personal information. They're going to struggle to say no to people. They're going to be easily influenced. They're going to feel responsible for how other people feel. And, you know, feelings come from within. Like, you can't take responsibility for how anyone else feels, you know, as long as you're not deliberately trying to hurt them or damage them in some way. How other people feel isn't your responsibility, unless they're your own kids, of course. They're going to fear rejection. They're going to be open to abuse. Someone with healthy boundaries is going to have the ability to say no. They're going to be able to say no to things that go against their best interests. They're going to be able to say no to things that they don't want to do. They're going to value their own opinions. They're going to be able to communicate effectively. They're not going to try and force help on others. As I said previously, forcing help on people, forcing advice on people is toxic behavior. And they're going to be able to avoid toxic people. Yep. Any questions with regards to any of that, let me know in the chat box. Yep. Again, we can be too trusting. There's going to be different kinds of boundaries. There could be physical boundaries, material boundaries, you know, allowing other people to take your stuff, sexual boundaries, emotional boundaries, allowing people to dump their emotional pain on you, mental boundaries. And being assertive is about knowing when to say no, without imposing yourself on other people. So being assertive usually requires emotional intelligence. And assertive people are usually able to negotiate better. They're going to suffer from less anxiety. And someone who's not capable of asserting themselves may need to resort to aggression. So someone who can't assert themselves, someone with porous boundaries, is going to allow things to go too far and get to a point where they need to use violence to correct a situation or get out of a problem. So setting boundaries is not a selfish thing to do, it's an act of self-love. Setting boundaries won't stop you forming relationships. Setting boundaries will help you to form healthier ones, ones that are based on mutual respect. If someone gets angry or abusive about your attempts to set boundaries, you can take that as a sign they are a toxic person and you can cut them out of your life. And as you start to be less codependent, less of a people pleaser, and start to set boundaries, you'll notice that people start to resort to emotional blackmail, you know, get angry, and you may find that you start to cut more and more people out of your life. But if you suffer from codependency, if you suffer from people pleasing, you'll likely also have CPTSD. CPTSD stands for Complex Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. It's suffered by prisoners of war and children who grow up in dysfunctional families. CPTSD is caused by neglect, physical, mental, and emotional abuse, ongoing and repeated trauma from which there's no escape, and it requires a reliance on your caregivers. So like a prisoner of war, you're reliant on your parents to feed you, clothe you, keep a roof over your head. You know, you're too small to fight back or run away. The symptoms of CPTSD include issues with emotional regulation. When we experience trauma, the amygdala, which is the emotional part of the brain, becomes larger, and the hippocampus, the thinking part of the brain, actually shrinks in size. So we become more emotional, more prone to emotional outbursts and issues regulating our emotions. We may also become shamed out of emotions in childhood. Anger is an emotion that most children get shamed out of in childhood. Without anger, you're going to take on more and more toxic shame. You may act out. Again, when the toxic shame comes up, you need to release it in some way. You need to suppress it somehow. So that could involve acting out, becoming narcissistic and abusive yourself, or acting in through self-harm, substance abuse. There's going to be a constant feeling of unease, like there's something wrong with you. You'll have a negative self-image. You probably suffer from negative self-talk. You'll have an inner critic, again, a negative inner voice that calls you names, puts you down. Again, when children grow up in dysfunction, they're looking to their parents and caregivers to help them understand the world, help them understand themselves. You know, their parents are like gods. What they say, we take as the truth. So if they're calling you names, putting you down, you're going to internalize that. You're going to think it's the truth. You have that negative inner voice that continues to play on in your head. You're going to have relationship issues. You're going to dissociate. You're going to have a fear of abandonment. And you're going to be a codependent and a people pleaser. So how many CPTSD symptoms do you have? Let me know in the chat box. Quite a few. Anyone else? Fear of abandonment. Many people become people pleasers, you know, and try and put other people's needs before their own in the hope that people, you know, will like them and won't abandon them. You know, once you actually start having stronger boundaries, you find that people tend to respect you more and people like you more. All of them, yeah. So a man called Pete Walker wrote a book called CPTSD, From Surviving to Thriving. And in that book, he gives his theory of emotional flashbacks and what emotional flashbacks are. He says that they're an amygdala hijacking. And when you experience an emotional flashback, you're moving in to a 4F response. So we're all born with equal access to the fight, flight, and freeze response. And Peter Walker added on a fourth response, which he calls the fawn response. So he said that the someone who overdevelops the fight response is going to become narcissistic. They're going to act out. Someone who overdevelops the flight response may use substances. Someone who overdevelops the freeze response is going to dissociate. They're going to go somewhere else in their head. Someone who overdevelops the fawn response is going to learn to put other people's needs before their own, to, you know, serve people. And if you're a child, you can't fight back because you're too small, can't run away. Freezing, if you're a very small child, generally learns to freeze and to dissociate. And older children, you know, they're going to become fawn responders. They're going to learn to serve people, to serve their parents, to put their parents' needs before their own. And because the trauma was repeated, or you were too young to remember, you experienced the emotion without remembering the actual event. As I said previously, we have the amygdala, which is the emotional part of the brain, and everything that our senses are taking in, they go through that amygdala before, you know, the thinking part of the brain. So the amygdala can react to situations much faster than the thinking part of the brain can, before the thinking part of the brain even knows what's going on. And emotional flashbacks can often be caused by intimacy, maybe because they cause us to remember, you know, how we were neglected or abused as children. Freeze and fawn. So growing up with dysfunction is going to limit our trauma response repertoire. We're going to overdevelop one or two of these trauma responses. And when we experience these emotional flashbacks, Pete Walker says that we're going to go into these trauma responses. So if someone's overdeveloped the fawn response, they're going to become a people pleaser. They're going to become a codependent when they experience, you know, something that triggers an emotional flashback. They're going to feel the need to serve people. And Pete Walker says that people who experience good enough parenting are going to arrive in adulthood with a healthy and flexible response repertoire. They're going to have appropriate access to all of their 4F choices. And someone with healthy fight response is going to be able to set strong boundaries. They're going to have healthy assertiveness and appropriate aggression. Someone with a healthy flight response is going to know when to walk away. We all go into the freeze response before we go into any other. The freeze response allows us to weigh up a situation, to know what our next course of action should be. And when you go into the freeze response, your brain releases all kinds of opioids to prepare you for any kind of physical damage that may be coming. The fawn response gives us the ability to listen and to compromise. So that's Pete Walker's theory on emotional flashbacks and what causes codependency. I leave it in my presentations because it's a popular one, but it's actually been disproven, been debunked. Brain scans have been shown that when someone's experiencing an emotional flashback, it's not the amygdala, it's not the emotional part of the brain that's being activated. So what are your trauma types? Let me know in the chat box if you're more of a fight, flight, freeze, or fawn responder. Fawn, freeze and fawn, yep. Anyone else? Yeah, as I said, it was Pete Walker was the man that developed that idea, and I believe he developed the fawn, the idea of the fawn response as well. So how does childhood cause CPTSD? As I said previously, till the age of 7 is known as the imprint period, and it's in this age range when neuroplasticity is at its highest. It's when you're learning all the most complex and difficult tasks, when you're learning about yourself and your environment. And babies are actually born without a fully developed brain. Your brain develops in those early years. 90% of your brain is developed before the age of 5. Is there any questions with regards to any of that? As children, we're looking to our parents to help us, you know, model for us how people should behave, to model for us what a man should be, what a woman should be, what relationships should look like. So if we're growing up in an environment where our parents are codependent, we are going to, you know, see that as that's the way to behave, and that's going to be our behavior choices. Okay, so attractions of deprivation. So we're going to be, attractions of deprivation is another theory. It says that we're going to be most attracted to the people that will traumatize us. Attractions of deprivation are caused by traumatic experiences in childhood. We all have these traumatic experiences. We're going to feel most drawn to the people that embody the worst emotional characteristics of our primary caregivers. So Sigmund Freud said that all women want to marry their mum. Sorry, all women want to marry their dad, and all men want to marry their mum. This isn't exactly true. It could be either parent. So the worst emotional traits of either parent, we're going to be attracted to people who display those traits. It doesn't matter if you're a man and, you know, your dad is a narcissist, or if you're a woman and your mum's a narcissist, you're still going to be attracted to people who display those traits, according to attractions of deprivation. As I was saying, the other theory on it is that that's just how you learn to interact with the world. That's just how you learn to, you know, deal with people and to how you believe people are. If you're growing up, you know, with violence or, you know, whatever, you're going to believe that all people are violent, or, you know, whatever the situation may be. So even though we may be adults, we're going to look to recreate these things. We're going to seek out the healing of these wounds in our intimate relationships. We're going to seek out people that irritate these wounds so that we can heal them. Does anyone have any questions with regards to that? Let me know in the chat box. Okay, so if we don't heal our inner child, we're not going to be able to bond in a healthy manner. As I said, we're going to have a fear of rejection. We're going to feel that people are going to, you know, reject us. People pleasing, codependency could also become counterdependent. So counterdependency is when I was talking about boundaries, that would be when your boundaries are too rigid. When you're counter-dependent, you know, growing up maybe with a parent who always lets you down, who tells you they're going to do things and then they never do them, tells you they're going to buy you a train set for Christmas and never buys you a train set. You're going to learn that you can't trust other people to get your needs met, and you're going to do everything yourself. So you're not going to be able to ask for help. You're not going to be able to form relationships. Probably going to avoid relationships and people in general. Trust issues. You may project your own insecurities onto other people, and you may look for flaws in other people, flaws and reasons to not like someone, reasons to reject someone, in like the kind of plan that I'll reject you before you reject me kind of thing. Does anyone have any questions with regards to that? Let me know in the chat box. I did have three slides explaining what codependency was. In a nutshell, codependency is when you need to look outside of yourself to have some kind of self-worth and to feel okay. Counterdependency, I just explained, I think. Any questions? Okay, super. So even in unhealed inner child, we're gonna feel empty. We're gonna be looking outside of ourselves to feel okay. We will be looking for people to save us, to people to rescue us or complete us. You know, it's very common in society that people believe that they need someone to complete them. You know, you hear people talk about their partner, their husband or wife as their better half or their other half. Or we'll be looking for people to save or rescue. So if you're codependent, you're probably going to be looking for people that you can save, people that you can rescue. You're going to be making unconscious agreements with people who fill the voids caused by your childhood wounds. So do you look for people to save? Do you look for people to rescue? Do you find yourself taking on a kind of rescuer role in relationships? Let me know in the chat box. The Taming of the Shrew. Anyone else? Try to look for someone who has qualities like you, and they act like they have those qualities in the beginning, but then they seem to change. Okay, so how can we overcome codependency? How can we overcome people pleasing? So the first thing that you need to realize is that you're going to lose relationships. You may start to, as I said, when you first start trying to assert boundaries, when you first start saying no to people, you may start to find that they get angry, that they emotionally blackmail you. You know, these aren't people that you're going to want in your life anyway, so you may as well let them go. If you've got kind of narcissistic people, you want to try and avoid them as much as you can. If you can't avoid them, you want to grey rock them. So you don't want to engage with them in any kind of meaningful way. You want to give them yes, no answers. You don't want to have deep conversations with them. You don't want to show them any kind of emotion. When we grow up, as I said, with dysfunction, we can take on the belief that there's something wrong with us, that we're not worthy, and then we're going to be looking to, as I said previously, serve people, to do everything we can to try and make people like us. So you want to do some inner child work to give your inner child self-love, self-acceptance. One of the things that I get people to do on my inner child program, which I'm going to be talking about in a moment, is I get them to look in the mirror for 10 minutes every day, to look themselves straight in the eye and to repeat the words, "I love you," to themselves repeatedly for 10 minutes. And to just stand there and do that, you know, people say it feels stupid. They may experience like lots of emotions and find themselves crying as they do it, but it's important to keep doing it. And the more you do that, the more you'll start to love yourself. The more you'll start to see yourself as someone who's worth defending, someone who's a good object. Again, as I said, we can internalize abuse and see ourselves as, you know, someone not worthy of defending. You know, we'll often be able to defend other people, but when it comes to ourselves, we let people walk all over us. And learn to become comfortable on your own. So if you're looking outside of yourself to feel okay, if you're looking to a relationship to validate you, you're not gonna be able to create the best quality of relationships. You're gonna jump into relationships with the first person that'll have you. And you're going to find yourself in dysfunctional relationships and codependent relationships. So get comfortable being on your own, be able to validate yourself, be able to have your own sense of self-worth, self-love, and have a regular practice, a regular relaxation practice. So that could involve hypnosis, could involve Qigong, yoga, and the more you take time to relax, as I said previously, that amygdala, that emotional part of your brain, is going to start to shrink down, and you're going to get more activity in the thinking part of your brain. Reconnect with your emotions. It's okay to feel. No emotion is good or bad, they just are. You know, every emotion serves a purpose. As I said previously, anger is a very important emotion. So if maybe you have issues with getting angry, maybe see if you can cultivate that more. Obviously, you don't want to get angry, you know, road rage or anything like that. But as you start to see yourself as someone who's more, validate yourself more, you're going to start to see yourself as someone worth defending. You're going to find that you're going to have a healthy anger response. How do you connect with your inner child? I'm going to come to that shortly. Mindfulness meditation. Again, becoming more aware of your thoughts and noticing them, not trying to fight against them. As I was saying previously, that inner critic, that negative inner voice can cause us to be codependent, can call us names, put us down, make us feel unworthy. So don't try and fight against your thoughts, just notice them. Don't try and fight against your emotions. What resists persists. So the more you try and fight against something, the stronger it's going to become. So how do you connect with your inner child? So starting on the 6th of December, I have a 4-week inner child program. It's going to consist of 4 group coaching sessions. All of the sessions are recorded. There's a Facebook group where I put lots of content to help with emotional eating, content to help with negative self-talk, inner child work, obviously. Weekly exercises and a workbook. All the sessions are recorded. So if you miss a session, you can download the recording, watch it back. You can also download the recordings to watch back at a later date. Going to be looking to reintegrate all ages of the inner child from infant to adolescent. And how do we do that? We do that by writing letters to the inner child. So all ages of the inner child and writing letters from the inner child to the adult self. And when you write these letters, you know, you want to tell your inner child that you love them, that you accept them, that you're glad they were born, things like that. When you write the letters back to your adult self, you want to write them, you know, telling your adult self what your inner child's feeling, how your inner child, what your inner child needs. Doing this kind of work can reduce anxiety. It can increase self-esteem, self-confidence, can control your impulses and reconnect with your emotions. At the end of every session, we have a hypnosis session. Again, to visualize connecting with our inner child, to visualize ourselves giving our inner child that self-love, self-acceptance. Is what people who've previously done the program have said. If you want to know more about the inner child program, you can book a call with me by the first link. The second link is the details of the inner child program. The first link is to book a free call. I offer everyone who comes on these workshops a 1-hour free hypnotherapy session, so you can book a call there. Also, if you're interested in doing the inner child program, I would recommend you book a call with me first, then I can tell you more about it, show you more about how it all works. So that's the feedback from people that have done the inner child program. So who wants to try some hypnosis? Excellent. As I said, just book a call with me via the first link. And I will tell you more about Who wants to try some hypnosis? Let me know in the chat box. Yes, if you give me your email, I will email you the workbook, and a link to book that call will be at the bottom of that workbook. Yes. Excellent. Any other questions? Excellent. As I said, if you want to sign up for the program, put that call with me now. You're scared about hypnosis. Okay, so there's no need to be scared about hypnosis. Hypnosis is a perfectly natural state. It's something we all experience several times during the course of a day. You ever driven somewhere, got into your destination, not remembered the journey? That's an example of hypnosis. That's an example of what's known as a flow state. And many people experience it where they're watching TV and they zone out, and time just flies, and then before you know it, you know, whatever you were watching was finished and it's time for bed. So it's something that we all experience several times during the course of the day. It's not something I do to you, it's something that I do with you. So do it with your cooperation. As long as you follow along with my instructions, you have no problem going into hypnosis. And the benefit of hypnosis, as I said previously, the more we relax, the easier it becomes to relax. So hypnosis is very good for that. Also, when we visualize ourselves the way we want to be, actually creates new neural pathways in the brain. The more we visualize ourselves that way, the stronger those neural pathways become. And you can also use hypnosis to visualize yourself connecting with your inner child, connecting with that younger version of you. And that's what we'll be doing tonight. yeah, feel free to turn your screen off if you wish. Before we do the hypnosis session, I'm going to show you some exercises to prove to you the power of your imagination, the power of your unconscious mind. So what I'd like to do, first of all, is to hold your hands out in front of you like so. Turn your left hand with your palm facing up. Keep your right hand with your palm facing down. Take a deep breath in. When you breathe in, you want to breathe all the way down into your stomach. And then as you breathe out, allow your eyes to close. With your eyes closed, I'd like you to just imagine that in that left hand, we've placed some heavy books. And those heavy books are weighing down on that left hand. To your right hand, we've tied some helium. And that right hand is rising up with those helium. So the left hand is lowering down and the right hand is rising up. Just imagine that now. The left hand's drifting lower, the right hand's rising. Don't try to resist or persist. Just imagine it happening. And then leaving those hands where they are, open your eyes. Notice any difference between those hands. If you notice a difference between those hands, let me know in the chat box. Let me know in the chat box. You noticed any difference between those. X. No problem. So now we're going to do another exercise. So once again, taking a deep breath in, breathing all the way down into your stomach. And you want to try and breathe down into your stomach wherever possible. It's known as diaphragmatic breathing, and it's very good for the health. It's also very good for relaxation. You ever notice someone sleeping, you'll probably notice that they just naturally breathe into their stomach. So when you're breathing into your stomach, that's when you're experiencing the most relaxation. And they say that children do this, but for some reason, when they start school, they lose the ability to do this and they start breathing into their chest. So breathing all the way down into your stomach. And as you breathe out, allowing your eyes to close. And with your eyes closed, I'd like to just imagine that you're walking into your kitchen. And there on the side in your kitchen is a nice bowl of juicy citrus. Could be oranges, lemons, grapefruits, or lime. I'd like you to imagine, just imagine picking up one of those fruits, maybe lifting it up towards your face, smelling those citrusy smells. What we're going to do, we're going to cut a bite-sized wedge out of this fruit. So placing it on a cutting board and safely and securely taking a knife and cutting into that fruit. And as you're cutting into it, all those juices are squirting out. They're flowing down onto that cutting board. Those citrusy smells are filling the air. Just imagine that happening. That's right. And then cutting into it. Once again, those juices are squirting out. Those citrusy smells are filling the air. And then picking up that piece of fruit, lifting it up towards your mouth, placing it in your mouth and biting down. As you're biting down on it, those juices are exploding in your mouth. Those flavors are exploding in your mouth. The juices are running out and they're running down, dripping off your chin. Just imagine that happening. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes, coming back to the present. Let me know if doing that exercise made your mouth water. Yes, excellent. Anyone else? Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay. So what we're going to do now, we're going to have a break for 5 minutes, so coming back at 8:10 UK time, and then we're going to do the hypnosis. Now, as I said, your mind can't tell the difference between a real or an imagined event. So what I'd like you to do in the break is to think about what your life will look like when you're no longer codependent. Think about how you'll know when you're no longer people-pleasing. What will your behavior be? How will you be behaving differently? Let me know in the chat box, and you know, I will build that into the hypnosis session. And so I will see you all again in 5 minutes. Breathing deeply, all the way down into yourself. Yes. When you're ready, you can allow your eyes to close if you haven't already. With your eyes closed, you can allow even more relaxation to begin to flow. Just listening to the sound of my voice. Any other sound you hear can allow you to relax. Yes. Seeing if you can notice any difference between those breaths. Maybe the in-breath is slightly cooler than the out-breath. Maybe you can imagine yourself breathing in relaxation, breathing out any stresses, any strains, letting, allowing your unconscious mind to take more and more control. All the most powerful things you do them at an unconscious level. You're unconsciously able to change from a baby to a child, from a child to an adult. And the unconscious is always there looking to protect you and keep you safe. You're sleeping deeply and alarm sounds, unconscious, knows, wake you. Really allowing that part of you to take more and more control. Drifting down, getting deeper, deeper. Yes. Relax. Maybe getting a sense of that relaxation forming at the top of your head. All those tiny muscles in your forehead. Release. Let that forehead's flattening. Going down into your eyes, eyelids. Your cheeks and your jaw, all the way down your neck, into your shoulder, down your arms, into your hands. In a moment, I'd like you to crunch up those hands, make a fist with those hands. Imagine sending any negativity, any stresses, any strains into those hands, into those fists. If you're making those fists tighter and tighter, you're sending more and more of that stuff there. So just doing that now, making fists with those hands, and sending any bad energy you want to let go of into those hands. Making those fists tighter and tighter. Yes. Then releasing those hands. Tension's flowing like water going down a drain. Yes. Release. Letting. Letting more and more comfort. The flow like a wave all the way down from the top of your head to the very
tips of it. In a moment,
I'd like to imagine yourself standing safely, securely in an elevator. In this elevator, there are three buttons. And when we press the first button, that relaxation is going to increase. The second button is going to take that relaxation even more from there, maybe doubling. The third button is going to take you all the way down into the very depths of trance, place where anything is possible, where positive change can occur. When those elevator doors open, you're going to find yourself in a special place, tranquil and calm, place where there's no one else around, it's only you. Could be somewhere you've been to before, but this place is different somehow. Could be somewhere you've just made. Pressing that first button, going down. Maybe there's a tiny voice in the back of your head telling you to just relax, relax, relax. And then the second button, going deeper. Once again, that voice in your head telling you to relax, relax, relax. And the third button, going all the way down. Yes. Those doors are opening. You're finding yourself in that. Maybe it's warm and sunny. Yes. Maybe it's beach, a meadow. A gentle breeze in you. Birds singing in the tree. And in this place, you can feel completely, totally at taking some time to explore this place, to look around. Every step you take in this place can allow you to feel even more comfortable. Yes. Finding a path. Walking down this path, you can see a figure off in the distance. That figure becomes closer and closer. You start to see that it's a small child around the age of 6 or 7. What colour are the hair and eyes? What kind of clothes are they wearing? They come closer and closer. You can maybe get a sense of connection with this child. Noticing that this child is a younger version. Maybe you had a toy, a pet that you like to take around with. Yes. Once you reach this child, once this child has come closer to you, you can bend down, give them a hug, holding them in your arms. telling this child that you're from their future, that you're the only person they'll never leave, that you love and accept. Yes. Maybe you can imagine yourself shrinking down and becoming that child, looking up at the adult version, feeling loved and accepted, feeling good in every way. Yes. Maybe you can get a sense of yourself filling up self-love, self-acceptance, connecting with that younger version. And you can begin to consider how your life can begin to change, how you can begin to change, being able to set better boundaries, to say no to people, to say no to things, go against best interests. Yes, but maybe you can see yourself in the coming days, or maybe there's a specific person that you struggle to say no to, a specific person that's been causing you problems in some way. I wonder if you can get a sense of yourself being able to stand confident and calmly in front of that person, deal with any issues, expressing your opinions, feeling calm and relaxed. Yes. Be visualizing, connecting with that future version. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 5. When I reach the number 5, you can come all the way back to the here and now, noticing how good you feel. In the coming days and weeks, you can begin to notice things, and those things let you know that you have more self-love, more self-acceptance, that you're more confident, more able to say no to people and things. And I begin counting. 1, allowing any feeling to return to your feet. Maybe you'd like to wiggle those toes. 2, as that energy flows up your body. 3, down your arms into your hands. Maybe you'd like to wiggle those fingers. 4, and on the next number, you can open your eyes, coming all the way back to the here and now, noticing how good you feel. 5, eyes open, wide awake. And if you like that, let me know in the chat box. Let me know in the chat box if you like that. Excellent, thank you. Excellent. Okay, so In the chat box, I've placed those links. Again, the first link to book a free session with me. Second link to find out more about the Inner Child Program. As I said, if you want to do the Inner Child Program, I would suggest you book a call with me first to find out more about it. The third link is for my Facebook group, which is a free Facebook group where I share content and information. The fourth link is to my YouTube channel, where I upload recordings, podcast episodes, and things. So does anyone? Yep, click the link. Click the link now, and it'll open in another window, or should do anyway. So does anyone have any questions for me? Any comments with regards to tonight's workshop, let me know in the chat box. Let me know any questions, any comments. Thank you, Helen. Thank you, John. Has everybody liked the workshop? Everybody found it useful? Okay, Helen. Well, in the workbook, I'm going to put a link to Eventbrite where you can find more workshops listed. You can also find them on Meetup. Excellent. Okay, so if you want the workbook and the recording, please private message me your email details and I will email it to you. Probably be tomorrow or Friday, before Friday this week. So private message me your contact details and I'll make sure that you get that email. Thank you, John. Bye-bye. Okay, so if no one has any other questions or anything you'd like to know, I shall say thank you all for joining me tonight. I hope you found it useful. As I said, please remember to check Eventbrite and Meetup for future workshops. Please. Have a look at those links. If you want to book a free call with me, you can do so by the first link, second link to the Inner Child Program, third link to my Facebook group, and the fourth link to my YouTube channel. So thank you, everyone. Thank you all for joining me tonight. Have a good evening, and I hope to see you all again. Thank you, and good night.